Hi, everybody. This is Gary Sandy, and thank you very much for listening to the WKRP cast.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say...
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
Are you awake? Whoa! Are you awake now?
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Say what?
Dear God, she's going to kill us all.
Welcome to the WKRP Cast, a deep dive rewatch podcast spending time with America's favorite radio station, WKRP in Cincinnati. My name is Alan Stair.
And I'm his wife, Donna. This is a week-by-week, episode-by-episode rewatch. We're getting into the trivia, the characters, and the details that have made WKRP one of America's favorite syndicated sitcoms for nearly 40 years.
So, fellow babies, don't touch that dial. It's time for the WKRP cast.
I'm a WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back to the WKRP cast. Hopefully you've gotten your box set of Shout Factory DVDs and you're ready to watch along with us. It is time to get to the fun stuff. We're going to watch some KRP. Donna, give us the lowdown on today's episode.
Today we're talking about Pilot Part 1. It was aired on the 18th of September, 1978. Written by Hugh Wilson. Story editors are Tom Chihak, Bill Dial, and Blake Hunter. And it was directed by Jay Sandrich. Struggling Cincinnati radio station hires a new program director to hopefully save the station. In this episode, we meet the staff and management of WKRP as the new program director, Andy Travis, tries to convince everyone that rock and roll is the way to go.
And this is the only episode ever directed by Jay Sandrich. He was a Mary Tyler Moore regular director, kind of brought in. Give this one some credibility. He's got a lot of experience. He's well-known among CBS executives. So, you know, this is give it a stamp of approval by having Jay Sandrich direct it. Now, remember, they went over to KTLA to use their videotape facilities because Mary Tyler Moore not set up for film. And since they
were not set up for video.
I do that all the time. Yeah. Mary Tyler Moore not set up for video. They shot film. And over at KTLA, they had this fantastic Golden West videotape department over there. So that's where they went to set up the show. And a big point we have to remember, when you're shooting video, you've got hot lights and equipment that puts out a lot of heat. So a studio that's shooting video keeps the air conditioning cranked way down. And a lot of that is because, you know, you let it get too hot, those lights make the people on stage sweat and that kind of thing. So keeping it really cold at KTLA to get us going with WKRP. And we start off in the lobby of KRP with the lovely Jennifer Marlowe, and here comes Herb.
Yes, Herb Tarlick. He comes in and right away starts hitting on Jennifer.
And, you know, I get the idea this is a morning ritual.
Yeah, where most people come in and check their mailboxes.
Well, and he even said that.
He comes right in and starts hitting on Jennifer.
That was his first thing. He's like,
any calls?
No.
Messages?
Nope.
Mail?
None.
Okay, how about lunch?
No lunch either.
Right.
It's just all in part of his morning routine. And hearing this now, after being around a lot of people that are in the business, I think I'm hearing Hugh Wilson's writer's ear being around radio people, because Herb starts saying stuff that never would have hit me before.
I mean, what do you want? Watches, jewelry, a side of beef fully dressed?
And it was very common in media, and really especially radio, to trade things.
Oh, I see.
Don't take cash, give me products. I remember my very first ever radio sales job right out of college. One of the first things I was assigned to do was find a gas trade, because they don't give you a mileage allowance. Thankfully, at that time, there were still locally owned gas stations. And I found a guy where I could say, hey, I'll give you 50 spots a month. You give me 5 tanks of gas or something like that. So that's what Herb's doing here. He's trading out a side of beef
to woo Jennifer. Okay. Well, and one thing we want to do here is we want to introduce a new segment.
Herb Tarlick, Fashion Alert.
That's right. Herb Tarlick Fashion Alert. When Herb shows up in an outstanding outfit, which Herb is known for, we're going to do a fashion alert. And we've got our very first one. And this is one that even Frank Bonner talked about in the book, America's Favorite Radio Station. It's the start of the Herb aesthetic.
Now, this one is pretty tame compared
really
to what
is.
We're going to see.
And,
but like you said, it's his first one. And what sets it off are the white belt and white shoes.
And you know what Frank Bonner said in his little Focus interview in America's Favorite Radio Station? He said that the belt and the shoes really spoke to him. He said he loved that little detail of the matching belt and shoes. But when he put on the coat and the sweater and all the stuff, it covered it up.
But he took care of that in this episode. He's wearing a salmon shirt with a sweater vest, and it's all tucked in so you can see that white belt. So, like I said, it's not that horrible of an outfit, but you can see the potential coming.
But the tuck is is extensive.
We also find out that Herb is married.
You're married, Herb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think when Herb is in front of Jennifer, it's like Men in Black. He gets a mind wipe. He doesn't remember anything about his life. It is just, blah, and will you go out with me? That's all he can think about. He's forgetting everything else. So that's
that one-track mind.
Yeah. Now we want to point something out real fast. On the back wall is and it's there throughout the series, only it's very different in this episode than it's going to be throughout, is the coverage map of WKRP. They have up on the wall there that they're a 50,000-watt AM radio station.
Oops.
Yeah, kind of a bad choice. But it was one of those technical things that Hugh Wilson didn't really research or worry too much about, and they put it in there. And kind of all the famous AM radio stations are 50,000-watt radio
stations.
Yeah, and
if you look at that map, you can see the circles going around, like the ripple effect of throwing a rock in a pond.
And that's how much area it covers.
How much it covers. And it goes all the way up through Canada and
down to Florida, which is probably legitimately what a 50,000-watt coverage map is going to look like, but definitely not a struggling AM at the bottom of the Cincinnati market. If you know of an AM radio station that's not local to you, it's probably a 50,000-watt AM. Here where we are in the middle part of the country, we have a few of those out of Chicago, WGN and WLS. Those are 50,000-watt AMs. We get them, you know, we're a couple hundred miles away, but we get them very easily. Out of St. Louis, you got KMOX. Those are stations that are famous and successful and hugely profitable and known, you know, over a huge area. And Hugh Wilson kind of said he'd heard that on a lot of these different stations
without
that he listened
really knowing
to.
What it meant.
Yeah, without thinking about it. And some 50,000-watt stations are so big because of the way AM works, bouncing off of the ionosphere, at night, they can cover the entire country. There are some of them that do like trucker shows from midnight till 6 a.m. because you can be on the road for 500 miles and keep listening to that station, not WKRP.
WKRP, being a struggling station, is getting a new program director.
I'm Andy Travis, the new program director.
And hired on the phone.
Yes. Now, does that happen really in real life?
It does.
At radio stations.
I don't know so much about program directors, but I know I worked with a morning guy who nobody met until the day before he went on the air. He came into town and stopped by the station to sign his W-4 and get a key. And he was on the air the next morning. And that was the first time anyone had physically seen this guy. So it did happen. I mean, and I think there were probably a lot of guys that got hired on the phone. And on faith, you pack up the car and head for that new gig. And Andy shows up and his future KRP is not so certain.
The next character to enter is my favorite, Les Nessman.
Les is in charge of news, weather, sports.
The last program director lasted 30 minutes before the big guy fired him.
Traffic and what else, Les?
Award-winning farm reports.
Yes, and Les walks in with that big, obvious bandage on his head.
Yes.
Which was an accident, but created a tradition.
As the story goes, they show up for taping, and right before he is to go on, Richard Sanders is hit in the head something falls on his head.
One of the stories that I read where he recounted, he said a light came down, and it was something at a height where he hit it with his head or it hit him
with it. And it had a sharp enough edge on it
on the barn door.
It made a pretty good gash in his head. So right before the taping, they had to rush him to the emergency room.
And he said in his telling of the story, he said he happened to look over and see Grant Tinker, president of Mary Tyler Moore, who's there for the taping. And he said he looked very pale as they were taking me out to head to the hospital.
And when they went to the hospital, the doctor looked at it. And, well, at first they said, well, let's just put some makeup on it and see if we can get by.
Well, they wanted to stitch it. And Richard Sanders said, I don't have time for that. We're right. about to start a taping. Can you just put a butterfly on it or something?
And then we'll put makeup on it. They said, no, that would cause an infection.
Right. The doctor said, you can't cover that up with makeup. This is a bad gash.
So
you
they
know?
Just settled for the butterfly. They did do a bandage.
And I guess they wrote some lines to try to explain it. They did shoot those lines. But then Richard Sanders said they just weren't. Good. They were written on the last few minutes under a ton of pressure right before they start shooting, and they just didn't fit or didn't. Mm-hmm. They just didn't work very well.
It didn't sound right.
So the decision was made to not address it at all. Just let him walk in with his big bandage on his head. Nobody asked less what happened. Nobody, you know, mentions
and he
it.
He doesn't offer up an explanation. No, they just let it go, and it works fine.
And it becomes a tradition. Richard Sanders decides that his character must be a klutz.
Right.
So he makes it his mission. Every episode, he's going to be wearing a bandage.
Somewhere.
Which brings us to our new feature.
And now a special look at this episode's bandage placement for the 5-time Buckeye NewsHawk Award winner, Les Nessman. This is the Les Nessman Bandage Report. Now, here's Donna Stair with her report about Les Nessman.
Right. Forehead.
This has been a look at the bandage placement for Silver Sow and Copper Cub award-winning journalist Les Nessman.
All right, so that is going to be your mission. Every episode, you've got to find the bandage and do the report.
I will do that. I accept that challenge.
All right. All right, so getting back into the lobby there, Herb and Les take off. Les is obviously not thrilled about Andy being there, and actually he starts to shake his hand and then pulls it back and goes,
so you're Travis.
Yeah, why is that? Well, why is he not that thrilled?
We find out a little later that, and actually Johnny says, you know, Herb and Les both wanted a shot at program director. But this to me says, obviously at some point prior to that morning when Andy walked in, Art had talked to somebody about hiring a new program
because
director.
Because Les knew he was coming because he says, oh, you're Travis.
Yeah, and we just on the phone there, you know, Jennifer called in.
Mr. Carlson, Mr. Travis is here to see you. Travis. I don't know. He claims to be the new program director.
But he must have at some point talked to him and said, hey, I hired a new program director because Les knew about it. But now now Arthur has no memory of it. So Herb and Leslie, but there was something Jennifer said that also I think is kind of this Hugh Wilson's writer's ear hearing radio people.
One of the best.
In media, it's a small community. Everybody knows everybody. And a lot of people move from station to station. They wind up working with people that maybe they were competing with 6 months ago. So you never want to trash talk anybody. So it's kind of common to have a little shorthand phrase like that.
One of the best.
Because you never know when you're going to run into somebody again and have to work with them.
Work with them or work for them.
So you never want to say anything bad about anybody.
So you always say.
One of the best.
So Jennifer starts working the room now. She picks up her, she's very invested in her plants. She starts watering them. And as she's watering them, she's doing this little monologue about what a lech Herb is and how he's always pawing at her. And she's, and it's kind of sexy and kind of.
I think she's teasing Andy.
She is. She is.
She's flirting a little.
I also think she's getting an idea. She's giving him a little bit of an opening. She wants to see, is he another Herb?
Right. That's true.
You're not like that, are you?
Who, me? Oh, no. Heck no.
How come?
I don't know.
Yes, he delivers that line as she's bending over to put the watering can down.
Now, we should also mention here, at one point, Andy's seated, which sets up a running gag that happens throughout this episode where men wind up eyeball to breast with Jennifer.
Whenever they're sitting.
Whenever they're seated, it seems to happen. We get Herb later really points it out. But this situation, her dress created a situation that they had to deal with through standards and practices. I guess somebody from CBS told Hugh Wilson, we have a problem with Jennifer's dress.
And what have you dubbed this problem?
I've dubbed this problem Nipplegate. Because of the very cold studio, Jennifer was at attention. And the Standards and Practices folks went, we can't allow this. So they told Hugh Wilson. Hugh Wilson tells a great story. He said that he loved working on a show with Jan Smithers and Lonnie Anderson. It made it just worth getting out of bed every morning, these beautiful women that he gets to work with. But he said when it came to talking to Lonnie Anderson, he said, I was intimidated as the next guy by talking to a beautiful woman. But to have to talk to her about her nipples was mortifying to him.
I can understand
that.
Yeah.
He said he's trying to talk to her. He said, I'm looking at her forehead. And she thought it was hilarious. She was just laughing about it. In her autobiography, My Life in High Heels, she mentions this. And they wound up, Hugh Wilson said, they wound up doing something in wardrobe that was some kind of a metal reinforced bra that corrected the problem. But I guess one of the things they tried was Band-Aids.
And well, that wouldn't work.
That didn't
Not
work at all.
The flimsy material of the dress.
I guess it made
wearing.
Things more visible.
Right.
And Lonnie Anderson said one of the things that was suggested that she thought was hilarious was a padded bra, which seemed to actually just accentuate the problem, make it all worse, make everything bigger and more prominent. So that didn't
but
go
either.
But
they got the problem taken care
yes,
of.
Yes, got it covered. But as they continued to shoot video in cold studios, it was always an issue.
They had to be aware of it. They didn't want her high beams on. That's what we used to call it.
Yeah, I got your high beams on. All right, so then the big guy bursts out of his office, and boy, he's not in a good mood.
Travis?
Yes, sir.
I'm Carlson.
Well, it's nice to finally
get in here.
See you in person.
So they adjourn to Carlson's office, and that's where we hear a little more about Andy's hiring, and Andy kind of points out what he's been through to get here.
You know, I quit my job in Santa Fe.
You did?
Yeah, I took an apartment here in Cincinnati, too.
Ooh, do you think that's wise?
He left his apartment. He left his job. He's got an apartment in Cincinnati now.
And I love that. Do you think that's wise? The thing for that line for me is the woo.
Ooh,
he says that
ooh,
little woo.
Ooh,
you think that's wise?
Oh,
man. Ooh. So anyway, Andy's got big plans for WKRP. But the thing that scares Art is they might include a little rock and roll.
Right. And this is where he's worried about what to do about Mama.
Andy didn't realize there was
someone else, a mama.
Someone else behind the throne. Yeah, Art's not the man. Art wants to be the man.
I thought you said you were in charge here.
I am in charge here, and don't you forget it, Buster. But sometimes Mama scares me a little bit.
And as Andy is leaving Arthur's office, he says it just might have something to do with some rock and roll.
All right, so later that morning, I was guessing about 10 o'clock because Johnny comes in and usually a morning board shift is going to end about 9:30 or 10.
But as we learn watching WKRP, there really are no regular board shift times.
And I think Johnny's working all morning. We kind of, in the next few episodes, we're going to see Johnny works a long shift.
He's there a lot.
Yeah, and sleeping through most of it.
Well, when you go into Andy's office for the first time, it's a mess.
Yeah.
He opens the door and you can tell it hasn't really been used as an office in a while.
Now, programming has not been an important element to WKRP for many years, and Andy's office is a catch-all, it looks like.
Right. There's a desk in it, and other than that, there is no sign that it's an office.
Yeah. Yeah. But
Andy's face, when he opens the door, he's got this hopeful look on his face. He's happy to be there. He's ready to go.
You know, I think he sees a lot of potential. He sees that this station is at the bottom. It is just as
There's
low as it can go.
This is rock bottom.
and I think he feels like, because if this is Michael Harrington, which Andy Travis's character professionally is based on, this is a guy that is used to finding this kind of situation, a station that's kind of stuck 20 years ago and they're not going anywhere, and he can come in and really make them go. So yeah, he's got that excitement
right.
in his eye. He's ready
and
to do it.
And this is where we meet John Caravella.
The doctor walks in.
Right.
And this is the first time we meet him.
He introduces himself as John Caravella, so that must be his character's real last name.
And then we get the air names.
I'm also known as Johnny Midnight, Johnny Cool, Johnny Duke, Johnny Style, and Johnny Sunshine.
Now, you remember that Hugh Wilson mentioned Johnny's character when he wrote it. He had in mind this guy, Skinny Bobby Harper, who was on WQXI. We looked up some Skinny Bobby stuff, and Skinny Bobby does not sound like nearly as exciting a DJ as Johnny. He really didn't have that personality based on the clips we saw. We didn't listen to his show every morning, and maybe in Atlanta you fell in love with him after a few days. But some of the clips we looked at, he just didn't have that energy that Johnny's got, or that rock and roll that Johnny's got.
It's hard to get up there where Johnny is.
Yeah, right? Probably so. But it kind of lends to that idea of Johnny brought a lot of other influence, or Howard Hessman brought a lot of other influences into creating Johnny. It's not just Skinny Bobby.
Right. And after Johnny says all of his names, that's what rings a bell with Travis. One of the names causes him to say, wait a minute.
Johnny Sunshine makes him stop.
Sunshine, haven't I heard of you?
You're not a cop, are you?
And again, that idea that radio's a small community and kind of everybody knows everybody. And Johnny tells his story about being on top out in L.A. He's making $100,000 a year. He's Johnny Sunshine. And Travis remembers.
Johnny Sunshine. I remember. Yeah, it was Los Angeles in the late 60s. Johnny Sunshine boss Jack.
We've watched this episode multiple times, and it wasn't until several times that I caught the second part of that little thing that he says there. He says, Johnny Sunshine boss Jack.
Johnny Sunshine boss Jack.
Which I think is maybe the name of a morning team. Johnny Sunshine boss Jack. It sounds like maybe, you know, his sidekick or his news guy maybe went by the name. And that was kind of common on the boss radio stations, as these guys would dub themselves boss so-and-so. That's what Travis remembers. But then there's something else that Andy remembers.
Well, yeah, he's like, now you had to leave that station, didn't you? What?
It was something you did.
It was something that you said.
Yeah. Booger.
I used the word booger on the air.
Yeah, Johnny got fired for saying booger.
Although in real life, it probably wasn't booger.
Well, but it was probably something that innocuous.
Right.
And at that time in the late 60s, early 70s, owners were scared to death of DJs that were playing fast and loose with what they were putting on the air. And the FCC was cracking down on them about obscenity issues and all of that. So these owners got really nuts on the being way too safe. And innocuous words like butt or booger or something like that, usually if it was funny in the playground in elementary school, that was something you couldn't say on the air when you were on the radio. It was funny to a bunch of 12-year-olds. You don't want to say it on the radio or you're going to get fired, like booger. So.
And right about now, we got Les and Herb coming in.
Yes.
And they are singing a whole different tune from earlier. They're welcoming Andy. It's past 10 o'clock and he's still there.
And I think since he wasn't insta-fired, you know, the minute he walked in the big guy's office, he wasn't sent packing immediately, they thought, uh-oh, this guy might stick around a while.
So now they're coming out with their hands out, reintroducing themselves, welcoming him. We're backing you 100%. Way to go. We're with you.
Yeah. And then they're gone. And Johnny's snoozing on the couch.
Right. And Andy's kind of confused. And he's like, what was that all about? And he's asking Johnny, what's going on with those two guys?
What two guys?
Herb and Les.
Nasty this morning and nice now.
So, yeah, Johnny picks up on it real fast that, you know, what's going on. And he explains to Andy, he said, well, you know, Herb wanted to go all news talk and Les wanted to go all farm reports. And they both wanted to be the program director last week. And then you got hired. So they're both mad at him. And Johnny says, I wanted to go all Hawaiian. That was his, you know, his programming idea.
All Hawaiian.
And then while he's talking about this, Andy's over doing a little decorating. And Johnny looks at him. He goes, what are you thinking?
And Andy says, well, I don't know. As he's unrolling a Kiss poster from their 1976 Bicentennial U.S. tour.
Yeah, we're going to do a little rock and roll, I think, on KRP.
And Johnny says,
do you know about Carlson's mother? You're going to love it in Amarillo.
Now we're in the studio. It's 3 days later, and we get our first look at the control room at WKRP.
The control room in late 70s style.
Yeah, back when DJs sat with a board the entire shift and they were actually changing records, and none of that happens anymore. It's all computers running it and the voice tracks are playing off the computer. But this is a real radio station in the late 70s, kind of.
Right, and not only late 70s style, but this is TV-style radio studio.
Right, so there's stuff that had to be changed for it to work on television. How you hear things is a big deal. They never listen to what's going out over the air after they start a song or start a commercial, and it used to drive me crazy, especially when I was working on the air at a station, to have them start a song and then turn off the monitors. Because that's where you're listening for that song. You know, when it fades out, you got more work to do. You got to outro it and play commercials or whatever. So Johnny even turns off the monitor during a commercial and turns it back on right at the end of it. So, you know, that kind of thing is different. They also never wear headphones. And in a radio studio, to cue a record, to hear what's going on, you always have to wear headphones, but they don't look good on TV and they're going to mess up people's hair. So you don't see a lot of headphones in WKRP.
Right. And also, as they're talking on the mic, people are coming in and out of the studio when they have an open mic, and you usually don't see that.
Normally, when you turn that mic on, it'll put something on outside of the door that says you're on the air, right, and a mic is open. And also, when you turn on a mic in a radio studio, there can't be any other noise, including the speakers cannot be playing. So when you turn on that mic, the speakers shut off and mute. And when you're standing in a radio studio and a DJ is talking, all you hear is his voice. You don't hear the music or the commercials or anything else that's going on. He can hear that in his headphones, but if you're standing there, you can't. Now, when we're watching, we get to hear what's going on out over the air, just like we were listening to the radio station, which right, is not what you do
normally.
So if
they did it as a normal radio station, it would probably be pretty boring.
Yeah, for us to watch, it really would be. So, you know, they dressed it up a little bit. But you get the feel of what radio was like at that time. You kind of have that sense. And those two big Harris turntables sitting there definitely were part of that era, you know. So, and Johnny's playing some of their beautiful music format.
Right. Now, in this scene, Bailey walks in.
Yeah. Bailey comes in with a stack of commercials on carts, which is also something that's some
carts,
antique.
Which is short for cartridges.
Cartridges that were little boxes that had tape in them, and they were a continuous loop, so you could put a commercial on it, play it, it would re-cue, and you could hit the button and play it again. It was always ready to go. And so Bailey is in traffic, is what her department is called. And traffic has nothing to do with cars. It's the commercials that are on the air are what she's taking care of. So she's bringing those into Johnny. And then she wants to watch him work because she has aspirations to do other things in the station. So she wants to watch him DJ for a while. And
but he's practically asleep. He's laying there playing beautiful music.
The man has given up. He just doesn't care.
He's barely breathing at this point.
Many people ask this age-old question. What happens when I can no longer feed myself?
He's playing these songs. Actually, I would almost love to see WKRP continue to be beautiful music if we got these kind of songs. How Can I Miss You If You Won't Go Away?
By Felix Mandel Orchestra. Right, by the Felix Mandel Orchestra.
Yes. And then he goes out of that into a choral rendition of You're Having My Baby.
By the Alleluia Tabernacle Choir. I love Johnny's face. When he puts this on, he literally looks like he's going to throw up. He's trying to keep from throwing up. He's got that look on his face.
But then he's got this, after the one song fades out, he's got this great line.
For some reason, we'll be right back.
And here comes Andy.
Andy is ready to make the big announcement.
He walks in with a stack of records and says, oh, by the way, I want to change the format today.
Today.
What do you think?
So now, when you talk about changing a format at a radio station, would this really happen?
No, it's a big deal when you change a format at a radio station. And a lot of times there'll be weeks ahead and you'll see ads and billboards and it'll say rock blank is becoming country blank, you know, or whatever. And
so
they warn people.
You warn people and you have time to get everything.
Yeah, get your ducks in a row.
Over, right.
Well, and also another thing that usually happens when you change a station's format is you get rid of the entire air staff because the guys that were on the rock station are not going to sound great on the country station, and they probably don't want to be there anyway. So if you make a big format change like that, there's usually a house cleaning that goes on.
Well, especially when you go from beautiful music to rock and roll.
That's whiplash right there. Andy hands Johnny a stack of records and says, go for it. And
because at first, Johnny's like, I think you want somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody 15 years younger.
I get the feeling Johnny's career has left him a little gun shy. He kind of likes being the non-existent guy at the beautiful music station in Cincinnati because there's not the pressure on you that there is, you know, on being on the top station in LA or whatever. So when Andy says, hey, you're it, I think Johnny's looking at it going, I don't know if I want this. I don't want success. I don't want to be known. You know, but Andy's got faith in it.
Also, I don't know if I can still do this.
Can still do it, yeah.
I've been at the bottom of the heap for so long.
Yeah, to have that energy and to have that thing to get you back up there. And Andy sees potential in Johnny. He's
and Johnny takes over and he changes the format.
Well, he sits there. And I love that he's looking.
Takes a deep breath.
He's looking at the having my baby that's playing, and he goes, "Do it." And then he does a thing that if you've ever owned a turntable, it's horrible to scratch a record like that. But it's a great sound.
Run that needle across.
It's
there.
It's perfect. So we got to do it. This
he
is the
got
scene.
A lot of joy. He had a lot of joy.
Yes,
out
he
it.
Did. Well, he actually broke the one record ticket off the table. But this is the scene that the Wall Street Journal, when they reviewed this episode, they said this is the scene that stole the show right here. Johnny introduces rock and roll to WKRP.
All right, Cincinnati, it is time for this town to get down. You got Johnny. Dr. Johnny Fever, and I am burning up in here. What? We all in critical condition, babies. But you can tell me where it hurts, because I got the healing prescription here from the big KRP musical medicine cabinet. Now, I am talking about your 50,000-watt intensive care unit, babies. So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say, give it to me straight, doctor. I can take it.
Something I want to mention about that little bit that he did there. A lot of times in the script, Howard Hessman said that it would just say, Johnny intros a song. And what Johnny actually says, Hugh Wilson, a lot of times completely left up to Howard Hessman. And Howard Hessman said this talk bit that we just heard, he sat down and wrote that out a couple of days before the episode. And that was all him. That was creating the doctor. And a lot of those talk pieces that he does are all his scripting.
Which I think that's why he plays it so well.
Yeah, he sells it. He's not selling somebody else's words. He's selling his own. And Howard Hessman, having this background of improv, he knows how to invest a character with traits and unique, you know, characteristics. And that's what I think comes out in these talk pieces. The doctor is alive.
Right. Now, it's at the end of this scene that there's something that comes up that is on a lot of the goof pages about WKRP.
And I saw this when...
It's very blatant.
It pretty much is. But when he first cues up the record that has the Ted Nugent on it, I looked at that and went, that tone arm's not balanced very well. And I didn't even mention it to you. I wasn't going to geek out on it. But then afterwards...
Well, don't get too geeky.
I'm not getting geeky. Afterwards, though, he's playing the label.
Yes.
If you look at the turntable, the stylus, the head shell is in on the label. And that means that tone arm wasn't balanced right. And when it first started
but
playing...
But the music is still playing,
yeah,
even though the needle's on the label.
I've always wondered, and if we can get an interview with somebody at some point down the road, I want to ask him, were those turntables really hooked up to anything? Or was everything added later, all the music later? Because I wonder if they could hear that. Because when Johnny gets up and he's throwing that microphone around, it's like he's hearing that somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I think that music was playing in the studio. Because if he's just doing that with nothing, it's amazing that he's able to get that level of energy. Because that Ted Nugent gets you going.
Yeah, Ted Nugent. And we are watching the boxed set, which has the original music. We've been talking to some people that are watching the
streaming,
and they're like, okay, so what is he really listening to there?
Yeah.
Because that just...
And that throwdown, those power chords that he is freaking out over, that is the Motor City Madman, Ted Nugent, and Queen of the Forest is what he's playing there. That's the first song on the rock station, WKRP.
I almost forgot, fellow babies. Booger!
Now we go into Andy's office, and we have another...
Herb Darlick, fashion alert.
It's 3 days later. Herb's in a new outfit.
Woo, yay.
And this one, you know, initially when I looked at it, I wouldn't feel bad wearing that outfit. It's a nice blue blazer. It's a red polka dot tie.
You still have the white shoes and belt.
Well, that's when I started to go, maybe I wouldn't be doing the white shoes and belt. And the white shoes and belt are blaring. They are loud.
Right. And you're right. The dark jacket isn't bad.
Until you start looking at it.
But you see, it has pale yellow elbow patches and a pale yellow patch on top of the right shoulder.
All the way kind of over. It comes down.
Yeah, it's different.
But then something that I just thought was hilarious. The little, every lapel of a man's suit has that little buttonhole. And sometimes it's even sewn up.
A little flower in.
You can put your boutonniere through there or whatever. Herb's is highlighted with that yellow material.
Yes, to match the patches. Also, the corners of the jacket pockets are highlighted in that same pale yellow.
And those little corners look like what you put in an old photo album, the corners that you would put on pictures of the corners of his pockets.
Those
hilarious.
And to top off this ensemble, you have a pale yellow pocket square.
So there we go. It's another Herb Fashion Alert. A twofer. We got a twofer today. So, all right. So Herb and Les are in there, but Andy has invited Bailey to join the meeting. And we see just how horrible Herb is to all women. We saw him hitting on Jennifer in the first scene, and now here he is with Bailey.
Oh, hi, Bailey. Anybody want any coffee?
No.
No? Okay, Bailey, you run along. We've got important business to discuss.
No. Bailey's here for the meeting, Herb.
So he thought Bailey was there to take the coffee orders, the drink orders, for the meeting.
Which is all Herb sees Bailey as, or I think any woman as in Herb's mind is, they're there to get me coffee. You know, that's his attitude. And
right.
But
this is a good way, I mean, a good thing that's pointed out here, I think, that Hugh Wilson was getting across is that Bailey is kind of like the new single young female executive.
She's kind of the Mary Tyler Moore of this group. She's that single working woman on her way up.
Right. One thing I did notice, it was in this scene that Jennifer is wearing slacks. And I don't remember seeing her in slacks. Usually she's in a dress.
Normally it's a dress, yeah. And a little dressier. The slacks look kind of dressed down for around the office for her normally. But yeah, she comes in and she's very upset about all the activity that Johnny's antics on the air are creating. She's having to answer the phones and it's getting bad.
I am swamped with phone calls out there about whatever Johnny is doing on the air.
Oh, how many?
Three.
Three whole calls.
So this is a happy, positive meeting for Andy, but it kind of cracks me up. He is announcing that they have just changed the format. Instead
right.
of having this meeting a few days before and saying, we're going to change on Monday, he has it after he's changed the format to the point where Herb falls off the
catches
couch.
Catches them all by surprise.
Yeah, Herb falls right off the couch when he hears that news.
During this meeting, I had a chance to look around Andy's office a little bit as well on his walls, and I think there is a Peter Frampton poster.
Kind of looks like it behind his desk. Yeah,
right.
There's a Peter Frampton on the wall. We're seeing some ELO on the wall. There's some different things starting to pop on his walls. And we're going to keep an eye on that as we keep going. So this is a happy meeting for Andy. He's all positive and fired up. And he's excited about rock and roll on the station. And he's outlining new duties of the staff.
Les Nessman's a little worried, you know, first of all, I'm still on, you know.
Les at first thinks, oh, here it is. We're fired.
Yeah, we're all fired.
And Andy's like, no. I just want sharper news, Les. And he tells Herb, you're going to have more sales. You're going to have to get out there. You're getting more commissions, but you're going to have a lot more work.
And he tells Bailey that he's going to give her some more duties, more responsibilities.
Special events, concerts. Suddenly Herb's bristling because that was his deal.
Right.
Well, Andy says, Herb, you're going to have three times the work. You're going to be way busier. And Herb's all worried.
You're going to be going out on dinner, luncheons and
what about
clients?
Some of our big clients like Shady Hills? We're going to lose them.
What happens when I can no longer feed myself?
But you're going to have, you know, more clients in their place. So
yeah. So you'll come back. You'll make more. So everybody, he's saying the right things to everybody, and they're all happy and they're excited.
They're feeling good about it.
Ah, Herb shaking his hand, saying, "You're the man, and this is it, and everything's
great. We're supporting
great.
You.
We're on it." And then
Herb, Les, follow me. Travis, you're fired.
And you know what struck me about that? Not a one of them went, "Oh no, hold on, he's got good ideas." No, they all run with Art. They're
right,
out of there.
Right, way to go, big guy. Best movie you've made all day.
Even Les has to get a little shot in at the end.
I knew you wouldn't last.
Oh, we move into Carlson's office now.
And
they go running in there.
Freaking out. Carlson is freaking out.
We're telling Johnny went crazy. Mine snapped while he was on the air. She'll buy that. Had that happen once to us here. A sportscaster went nuts right in the middle of a swimming meet. Started barking like a dog.
So Andy follows him. he's just been canned in his office, and they go running out. Well, Andy doesn't know. We went back. I thought Andy knew, but we went back and looked at this. Art never said in Andy's office that Mama was coming. So Andy doesn't know this part
of it. Right, he just said, Herb, Les, come with me.
Yeah, yeah. So they take off into Carlson's office. So Travis comes bursting right in, and Art's immediately like, you know, hey, don't you know you're fired? Get out of here. Andy challenges him, comes right back at him, and says, hey, hold on a minute. What's going on? And I thought that was kind of gutsy, but you're kind of looking at it from the standpoint of, this is a guy that, he's had to do this in his career. He's
right.
Probably had to fight with other program managers and other station or program directors, station managers.
He's not short on confidence at all. And he believes in himself and what he can do. And wanting to know what's going on.
Yeah. And I think he's probably come up again. He's butted heads about something as radical as what he's doing with WKRP. And he's won before. So, yeah, he's not going to go down without a fight. And he comes busting in there. But then he finds out the real reason.
This is where he learns that Mama's on her way.
Mother! Sweetheart, come in. You know Herb and Les, don't you?
Hello, Mother Carlson.
Mama?
Gee, Mom, you look like $1 million.
But keep away from
me. Here comes Mama, played by a woman named Sylvia Sidney. And we got a big kick out of Sylvia. She's a tiny little woman. And it struck...
Big personality.
But it struck both of us when she first came in there. She bears a striking resemblance to a ventriloquist doll from that era in the 70s and 80s named Madam. A guy named Waylon Flowers had a character, a puppet that he operated that he called Madam. And her features look so much like Sylvia Sidney. We both saw it.
Right.
I looked over and I said, you know who she looks like? And we both caught it.
And if you don't know who Madam the Puppet is, Google it or get on YouTube and find Waylon Flowers.
And it's just Flowers, like Flowers, just like the word flowers.
And his puppet, Madam.
And his puppet, Madam. But it's kind of the high cheekbones and the over-accentuated lips and the very kind of the chin is jutting. And
she's an old lady puppet.
Yeah, yeah, an older puppet. And we did look up Sylvia Sidney, who has been an actress her whole life. Going back into the 40s, she was quite the beauty.
Yes, you showed me some pictures, and she was very pretty.
But now she's looking more like Madam. So and
or Madam looks like her.
Or Madam looks like yes, Madam looks like Sylvia. But one of the things that Hugh Wilson mentioned, and he was not even the most diplomatic about it. He said she was not a pleasant woman, and no one liked her. Sylvia Sidney. She was, and he said a big part of it was she thought the show was ridiculous. She didn't get it, didn't like it.
So if you're not invested in the show, why? Yeah.
And I think when she pushes Art's hands off of her. He goes, leave me alone. I think she's really mad. That's not acting. She's just really mad. So, Mama's there wanting answers about this ugly noise that is coming out of my radio. She doesn't say ugly, but she just says that noise
that
is noise coming out of my radio.
That noise was emanating from my radio.
And what's so funny is Art is just freaking out in the presence of Mama. He's firing people. He makes Herb the program director.
He's trying to do anything to make Mama feel better.
Yeah. So Mama, she's looking around the room, and she picks out the one guy she doesn't know, points at Andy and says, who are you?
Are you responsible for the strange sounds I heard emanating from my radio this morning?
I am.
Well, explain yourself.
But Andy stands up for himself, and he actually talks to Mama and tells her what he's got in mind and what he can do. It's not fast enough for Mama.
Well, he hits on the thing that motivates Art is profit and making money. And I think that's how Art measures his success. Is the station profitable? And it's not. We do find out much, much, much later. Well, we find out at the end of the series that Mama never intended to make money from this station. That's the overarching thing. But here early on, money is a big driver. And Andy says, I can make you money out of this station, but it's a 2-year plan that he's outlining. And she said, I don't know if that's fast enough.
I want a faster turnaround.
She finally agrees begrudgingly.
Yeah. Andy's in. He's about to walk out the door when here comes Venus. And it hit me, Andy's standing there holding the door handle when the door pushes and kind of pushes him into the room and Tim Reed walks in as Venus. And I was thinking back to the top of the episode when Andy arrived, Jennifer called in to the office.
To announce his arrival.
So here's Venus just walking right in. But you had a good theory on this.
Well, I just figured, you know, Venus walked into the lobby and wanted to see Mr. Carlson or
Andy,
whoever.
Probably
or Andy. And I think that Jennifer said, well, just walk on in. They're all in there.
All in
you
there,
might as well go in there, too.
Just add to the insanity. So
he does. He walks right in.
All right. Mama and Venus's interaction, though, is way too funny.
What is that?
Oh, may I introduce Mr. Venus Flytrap?
Hey, little mama.
Which I don't think Mama has ever been approached that way before or addressed in that way before.
Not in that manner. To end the scene, Mama's out of there.
Well, as she's leaving, what I love is her eye roll.
Oh, she's got a killer eye roll. She says, I'm going to tear you down brick by brick if this doesn't work. Yes. And she's making all kinds of threats.
And she does say, nice to meet you two, looking at Travis and at Venus Flytrap. And then as she's turning to leave, she rolls her eyes. It was great.
I'm surprised she didn't knock people over with that eye roll. It was a big eye roll. But the thing that sells her to Venus is...
Did you have a big audience there?
The biggest.
Welcome to Cincinnati, Mr. Flytrap.
The final scene, we're back in the studio, and it's most likely at night because Venus is on the air.
Well, I think it's probably that same day that we first met Venus, and now it's that night, and he is on the air, so he's on that fast. He arrives midday,
right.
And he's on by 7.
And he has a big gong in the studio set up.
The moon is high. And so am I.
And as he's starting his little rap, getting into his thing, Art is peeking through the window. He's standing out in the hallway, peeking into the studio. And you see Art just kind of shake his head and think, is this the right decision? Should we be doing this? And you end on a shot of him just walking down the hall and you hear Yowza, 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 Dance, Dance, Dance by Chic. Which kind of cracked me up, too, that Venus's cut that he's playing is a disco song for a station that just went rock and roll. But Venus kind of gets to program the evenings himself, I think. So Art gives one last look into the studio. You can see he's really questioning whether or not this was the right choice for his station. And we get a great closing shot of his back as he's walking down the hall, kind of perplexed and out the door. So that's pilot part one. We've set up the station, the show, the format change. We've met all the characters. Now, where are we headed next week?
Well, we're going to be watching pilot part two.
When we find out if this rock and roll thing is going to stick.
We'll see.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the WKRP cast. We thank you for joining us. Remember, if you want to watch along, you can stream WKRP from the CBS All Access app. There is a subscription required for that. You can buy it streaming by the episode or by the season from Amazon. But beware, anything streaming is not going to have the original music cues that we reference throughout the show, and the episodes might be shortened for syndication. So for full 25-minute episodes with the original music, we recommend you pick up the Shout Factory DVD box set. Shout Factory has restored most of those original music cues, and the edited scenes are put back in. So you'll find the complete series boxed with a release date of 2014. Individual Shout Factory seasons were released starting in 2015.
Got a question, comment, or correction? Let us know about it. Write us, WKRPcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have any firsthand experience or memorabilia from the production of the original WKRP in Cincinnati, please share. We'd love pictures of items or scans of documents, things like props, costumes, scripts, call sheets. Anything from the set would be amazing. We haven't found a lot of original documentation about the production of the show out there. We're trying to create an online repository of items. Thanks again for listening to the WKRP cast.
And remember to rate and like us on your favorite podcast app.
May the good news be yours.
The WKRP cast is not endorsed by MTM Enterprises, Shout Factory, or CBS. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. WKRP in Cincinnati, the WKRP logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of WKRP in Cincinnati characters are registered trademarks of MTM, CBS, Shout Factory, or their respective copyright holders.
I almost got fellow babies. Booger!